I'm Vermont Edition producer Matthew Smith, and I wanted to let you know the podcast you're about to listen to has been edited for clarity and brevity, so we saved you some time to get right to the good stuff. Enjoy.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Among the undeniably essential workers during the COVID-19 pandemic have been people who work in grocery stores, stocking shelves, ringing up purchases, bagging, handling carts. But on Monday, Health Commissioner Dr. Mark Levine expressed concern that he wasn't seeing uniform mask use in customers or store employees when he visited a few shops over the weekend.
I found lots of people wearing facial coverings, both in the ranks of those who were frequenting the stores as well as those who worked at the stores. But I also found noteworthy exceptions. And I realized that many of them, whether they've been told not to wear a facial covering or whether they just chose to not wear one, are putting themselves at extreme risk. Because we've told you that people can be in a pre-symptomatic phase with COVID for about 48 hours, and one would not know that you could get infected by them. Likewise, if it was one of the employees who perhaps was stocking a shelf or bagging items for you as a customer, and they did not have a mask on, one would be potentially able to get infected from them if they were in a pre-symptomatic phase. So again, I strongly urge the use of facial coverings.
That was Health Commissioner Mark Levine speaking Monday. Since then, some stores have been more forceful in asking store employees to wear masks. Some large grocery chains have directional signals asking customers to go up one aisle and then down the next to avoid having to pass within a foot or two of one another. Others have limited the number of people allowed in at a time. Today we're going to take a look at customer and employee safety, and we're also going to talk about the supply chain, why it's still so hard to get toilet paper, and how stores are working to make sure they have enough on the shelves for people in need. Joining us for this conversation is Mike Evans, Vice President and General Manager overseeing 8 Vermont stores for the Associated Grocers of New England. Mike, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well. I'm glad to have you here. And also joining us is Aaron Segrist, president of the Vermont Retail and Grocers Association. Aaron, nice to have you back on the program.
Thanks for having me, Jane.
Aaron, can you start us off by telling us a little bit about the numbers we're seeing in Vermont? We know that fewer people are out and about, but also a lot of people cooking at home, a lot of people early in this pandemic really stocking up, in some cases hoarding. How are the numbers shaking out so far from what we know?
That's a good question. It depends on the store, I think. But I'm hearing from my members that, purchasing has decreased significantly, clearly, over the last couple weeks. You know, business income or business revenues have been reported seeing a decrease between anywhere between 30% and 40%.
Wow. Anyway, between 30% and 40% of
yes.
revenue down?
Of revenue down since this time last year. I think grocery stores especially saw a huge uptick in revenue during the first couple of weeks that the pandemic had broken here in Vermont. But things have calmed down quite a bit and people are very much staying home. And I think part of that decrease is because of the hoarding that happened at the beginning. We'll start to see a little bit of leveling out, but by no means are our businesses high on the hog these days, to say.
Mike, is that something you're experiencing in your 8 stores?
In our 8 stores, really unique. We pull a lot of our products locally here and also out of our main supplier from AG of New England out of Pembroke, New Hampshire. Our business, we're located in certain segments of our towns, and we are still seeing good sales numbers come in, which are unprecedented to this day, even as of yesterday. What we're seeing is the customer count drop due to social distancing. But our basket sizes are almost double, which is good because people are abiding by what the health officials are saying as far as social distancing and staying at home and whatnot.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds like for you and for the people that you employ, that's actually quite good. If you're seeing higher than normal sales but lower than normal volume of people, then there's some sense that safety measures are in place and people are following them, but you're still making the income that you need to be able to pay your staff and keep going.
Yes, we are, yes.
And where are your shops? You have 8 stores.
Yeah, our stores start all the way up by the Canadian border in Vista Newport. We have a store in Richford called Vista Richford, our Jericho Market here in Jericho, Vermont, Johnson Sterling Market in Johnson, Richmond Market and Beverage in our Richmond store, our Richmond town. We have Shelburne Market in Shelburne and Village Market of Waterbury down in Waterbury Center. And we also have the Londonderry Village Market, which is new to, under our leadership. Down in the southern part of the state. So we're pretty much spread out across the state of Vermont. And we're seeing these trends pretty much blanket across all of our segments.
Hmm. So, Aaron, in terms of what you're seeing overall in the overall picture that retail sales are down significantly, do you think that maybe there's a difference between smaller stores and bigger stores? Or, you know, where's the discrepancy between what Mike's experiencing?
Yeah, that's a good point. I didn't touch on that. The smaller stores, especially the country stores, are and many of the stores that have shut their doors and are acting as personal shoppers and doing curbside service only, have seen a decrease. Additionally, some of the Vermont-owned convenience stores have seen a decrease, mostly because people aren't driving anywhere. Obviously, the large grocery stores are doing well, again, because I think that's the first place that many customers think about going to stock up. We did see, again, an increase the first couple of weeks, but it is leveling out. So our smallest stores around the state, our country stores, are seeing a significant drop in revenue, especially these days. But hopefully that'll even out soon.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose if people are staying home, they're not stopping by for, you know, gas and beer and a couple of other items at the end of the workday, and perhaps really are trying to do what the governor's orders say and stay home more and only go for occasional trips to the grocery store, in which case you would see them going to a larger store where they can get more things. And speaking of which, let's go to Mona Golub, who's on the line with us now. Mona, you represent Price Chopper Market 32, right?
Yes, I do.
So what are you seeing?
Thanks for having me today.
Yeah, thanks for calling in.
Well, we've got 131 stores across 6 northeastern states. And I think most importantly, I concur with Mike relative to how social distancing is beginning to affect the number of customers coming in on a daily basis. But the fact that demand is still high and irregular compared to what it usually is. Most importantly, the food supply is not in jeopardy. You know, most supermarkets have anywhere from 20 to 25,000 items in the store. And while some are on allocation, which in our industry speak merely means we're not getting 100% of what we're ordering, product is still flowing. Some products are slower to replenish than others. And in some cases, manufacturers have slowed production on some varietal products so they can focus on making those which are most popular. So at times you may see different sizes or brands in the store, but the majority of categories are present and accounted for. We put, like many others, limits on certain high-end demand items to discourage stockpiling and help spread the goods around. But truly, in bottom line, if we're respectful of one another, there's plenty to go around.
Is that true for paper products, specifically toilet paper?
Specifically toilet paper, I would say not. We're getting in some as time goes on and selling through every bit that we distribute to every store each day, because people bought the equivalent of what they would need to get through the rest of 2020 during the first 2 to 3 weeks. That particular category is going to be difficult to replenish so that it will be normal by all circumstances. But most others, outside of hand sanitizer and disinfectant wipes, are coming in, and only some of them unevenly.
Mona, before we let you go, I want to ask you a question about safety, because we're gonna talk a little bit about face masks and other ways that both customers and employees and staff at stores, grocery stores, are being asked to help prevent the spread of COVID-19. What is the policy for Price Chopper Market 32?
Well, with regard to sanitation, we continue to increase both the frequency and intensity of our protocols on almost a daily basis. We've had a hand-washing regimen in place since the start, with hand-sanitizing liquid in between. As many know, the CDC is still saying that a regular hand-washing regimen is better than gloves, the surface of which may carry the virus. We have been following the CDC's opinions, and that includes the evolution on the thinking with regard to masks. So we've ordered and distributed shields at this point. We've been able to get our hands on some face shields across the last week or two. We've been trying for 3 weeks now to get masks and continue to get them in drips and drabs, with many shipments having been diverted to the healthcare industry. But we're working overtime to source and supply enough disposable masks for all of our teammates, which equates to about 8,000 needed per day. We've been doing that since mid-March. And masks are currently flowing into our stores, particularly in the couple states that have mandated their usage. And we've now had a couple of the states that we're in propose mandating them for customers as well. So the competition level to get hands on masks has only increased.
Yeah.
And we're working to get them both disposable as well as reusable, washable from many different sources. Our social distancing protocols are extensive. We've erected signage. We've laid down floor graphics that emphasize the message. We've installed plexiglass shields, not just at our registers, but at our customer service desks and pharmacy counters. We've instituted the one-way aisles you spoke about, our alternating open registers, and limiting the capacity of our stores to less than 50%. And additionally, in the last couple of days, we've deputized social distancing captains at each store to actually work with both teammates and customers to encourage adherence to the signage and the standards that we've laid out throughout the store.
Hmm. Wow. So it's evolving. Not only have you put things in place, but you continue to put more things in place and still try to source and then be able to distribute things like face masks.
Exactly. Definitely. We've added layers of sanitation along the way as well. Obviously, disinfecting all of the high touch surfaces, from cart handles to keypads and check writing stands and instant lotto machines and door handles and service case windows and so forth throughout the day. 3.5 weeks ago, we began hiring professional crews to come in and clean our stores each and every night on top of that while we're closed and replenishing. We've suspended bottle redemption in a number of areas, given the close quarters of doing that job and the staffing that would really make it difficult to keep social distancing. And we've also asked that those customers who are bringing reusable bags into the store pack them for themselves.
So they are allowed to bring in reusable bags, though?
All except in New Hampshire, the state of New Hampshire. Yes.
That's Mona Golub, Vice President of Public Relations and Customer Services for Price Chopper and Market 32. Mona, thanks for calling in. Appreciate hearing from you.
Thank you.
We're talking about grocery stores and safety. Mike Evans, I'm wondering for you, for the 8 stores that you represent, what are your policies? Let's talk about for employees first in terms of sanitation and safety and mask wearing.
So we here in our stores have implemented face mask wearing to all of our employees this past Monday, following the direction of the state health officials. The doctor spoke about on Monday.
Mm-hmm.
And just like Mona, a lot of the items that they've talked about, we have instituted in our stores as well. Anywhere from hiring outside cleaning crews to come in during the course of the day and at night, to hand washing the shields that we have up at our registers, to deep cleaning routinely through the day with a checklist that they use. And also making sure that our employees are, abiding by the hand washing procedures that we have laid out, which they are doing and they're following, and keeping social distancing. I can tell you if an employee does have some type of fever or some type of sickness or they feel sick, the direction from me to the all the store directors and the employees are too. We ask them to stay home and not to come into work till they're feeling better or see the doctor.
And do you pay them if they have to stay home?
We do. Yes, we do.
And in terms of the mask wearing, how are you helping people get a hold of masks if they need them and then learn how to use them? And I think a lot of us think, well, it's obvious how to wear a mask, but it's not necessarily, you know, how to put it on, how to wear it effectively. I did a big grocery shop yesterday and I saw a lot of employees, especially at the store that I went to, with the mask over their face, but not over their nose. So, you know, there actually is a little bit of education in this. So how do you go about doing that?
So what we do, we educate our team members out there from the store directors. Store directors take that learning down to their team and to show them how to properly wear it. While we encourage it, we make sure that they follow it. Sometimes the cloth masks don't work, and we do have some paper masks that are available for them, and we also have more coming in today. But every store has the mask, and as far as wearing them, we show them how to use them. And educate them as we go forward. Even our vendors, the vendor partners, are required to wear masks as well. I think for the most part, most of our team members and our associates enjoy wearing them. I feel it adds another layer of protection for them and also the customers. I can tell you that the customers are very, very pleased that we're doing them. I was hearing some comments back and forth from the customers saying we need to put them on. We did. I mean, I've gotten a lot of responses about how well we've taken care of our stores and how well our employees are representing the company as far as following social distancing, the cleanliness of the stores, and what they're doing to add that ever extra layer of protection.
Well, I hope that in a little while maybe we can talk more, too, about what that kind of communication is like with customers and what customers are saying and if you're sensing appreciation or sensing, you know, frustration and how that's working, that level of communication with customers. But, Aaron, I want to read a couple of emails that we got about what we're talking about now, the mask wearing, and see what, you know, how you would respond. So Jessica says, I'd like to know why staff and customers are not being required to wear masks. I'd also like to know why there haven't been restrictions placed on how many people from one family can go into the store. There should be a limit to one person per household. And Susan in Cuttingsville emailed in to say, I'm talking about the Rutland Hannaford. She says, I was recently shopping in Rutland. The store provided sanitizing wipes for the carts and had instituted one-way traffic in the aisles. I would say that virtually all the customers were wearing masks, though they were less consistent in following either the new floor plan or social distancing. But as far as I could see, less than a third of the store's staff were wearing masks. In some ways, it was actually nice to see a young man stocking the produce department share a rather explosive laugh with a colleague, but it was a bit unsettling as well. It just seems to me that more of the store staff should be wearing masks. Aaron, why not a blanket requirement to all of the grocery stores in Vermont that all employees and perhaps all customers need to wear masks?
I think Mona touched on that a bit. They have been working around the clock, and I know that several of the larger grocery stores have also been working around the clock trying to source access to these face masks. I've been in touch with several of them throughout this entire week, trying to help them find new sources for face masks. It's just the sheer lack of supply, I believe. You know, they're doing everything they possibly can. I have one member who shared with me that he has placed 3 separate orders, and all of them, including one for $13,000 worth of face masks, has been on back order for almost 4 weeks. You know, we've shared our concern with the administration and the Agency of Commerce and Community Development, but we certainly don't want to be raising the flag saying take them away from the frontline healthcare workers and give them to our grocery stores. We want everyone to have access to masks. You know, we as an association and all of the grocery stores are doing everything that we can to find access. It's just, it's taking longer to get those masks from overseas or from anyone that we can possibly be in touch with.
And let's go to Ben, who's calling in from Barrie. Hi, Ben. Go right ahead.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I have a lot of friends who work in grocery stores in various parts of the state, and I've been keeping up with their experience of being grocery workers under COVID-19. And it seems like most of them have been feeling really underserved by the management of the stores that they work for, that the measures that have been taken have been insufficient and too slow in coming. And I'm wondering why we don't have any of them on the panel for the program today. There are some unions that represent them. I'm sure they could have been found. And also what the managers who are on the program today have to say in response to the complaints from their employees that they dragged their feet in the interest of keeping revenues up. Thank you. I'll take my answer off the air.
Yeah, Ben, thanks for your question. And let me first put it to Aaron Segrist. You know, what are you hearing from people who are working at these stores about what they may perceive or see or experience as a lack of strong management and a lack of people keeping their own safety in mind?
Full disclosure, we work with the businesses. We have not heard from the employees of the businesses. We've heard from various members of the public about their concerns, and we've shared that information with store managers or with contacts within a specific store. But we have not heard from employees. We absolutely take any information in and share it with whether it's a manager or another contact at a store, but we also encourage them to speak with management, or if it's a larger store and they have an HR department, we encourage them to reach out to HR as well.
Mike, what about for you? How are you managing?
I think that's a great question Ben brought up about employees. About our company, we're very pro-employee-based. And when we have any type of complaints about how if we're slow, which I have not had any, or if I have a concern about an employee has a concern about their health and well-being, we work with that employee immediately. We don't let things drag and we don't let things fester. We react immediately to any type of concerns. And we're very proactive about with our store teams, our directors, to make sure we get the answers right back to the employee as fast as we can. And normally that's within, I would say, an hour of after we hear anything. And I can tell you our call-in rates or questions or concerns as of this date from any employee has been maybe a handful, if that. And it was more out of, I think, concern other than worry, if you will, about certain things about their personal health and well-being, and we work with them.
Well, I was going to ask you about that, Mike. You know, if you have employees who live, for example, with a vulnerable person or somebody who might have a higher risk of contracting COVID-19, how do you work with them to either give them a different job or do you furlough them? You know, how has that worked?
It depends on the situation at hand and what they need. We usually work if it's a person that they need to take care of and they want to work, then we work with their hours. If they want a furlough, we do that as well with no questions asked.
Hmm. And Ben, to your question about why don't we have, you know, other kinds of grocery store workers on the panel today, it's a good question and I take your point and I would really like to hear from one. We don't have any on the panel today, partly because we're talking about more management level issues of stocking and policies, but also because it's tricky when we can't go places right now to be able to find somebody who's willing and allowed to speak with us, and stores didn't offer us an employee to speak with, but we would love to hear from one. So if you work in a grocery store, if you are feeling good about your experience, if you're not feeling good about your experience, you can call into the program now, 1-800-639-2211, or send an email to us and we'll follow up, vermontedition@vpr.org. Let's go to Jeffrey, who's calling in from Albany. Hi, Jeffrey.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just want to start off, give a shout out to all the retail workers right now and everywhere. It's really intense. I used to work, I just recently stopped working at a food co-op in Hardwick, Vermont, at the Buffalo Mountain as a produce manager for 9 years, and I can't even imagine what it's like to be on that end right now. We are only doing curbside and deliveries at our store. It's a small co-op, and so it's very limiting. It's reducing sales on a lot of things, especially local goods. A lot of stuff's impulse buying. And we're farmers, and we wholesale at the co-op, too, and we're worrying a little bit about that because a lot of that's the aesthetics, the appeal. You walk in the produce department, and you're like, ooh, that looks interesting. Might be a little harder on a list, you know, or pictures online and stuff. But we, some board members, old-school board members, have been involved in the co-op for years. Most food co-ops in the state have started as a buying club. And most people, if folks aren't familiar with buying clubs, it's where you pre-order in advance and you get a bunch of stuff on pallets and bags of rice and whatnot, and then you divide it up amongst your members. And there's been talk about if this is situation we're in right now, it's going to keep going on, that maybe we need to go back to that model. And that's why I'm really calling in, is to encourage that. Like, buying clubs are really critical. They're important. It's a really good model, especially as a cooperative, and it reduces waste. I'm curious if anybody out there has done it with produce yet, a buying club. I think that would be a really great model because that way you're definitely going to reduce your waste.
Yeah, Jeffrey, thanks for that. I appreciate hearing your thoughts on that and working from the inside, both having worked at a co-op and now sourcing some of your items to a co-op and talking there about buying clubs. Interesting idea. And yeah, if anybody's tried that, send us an email, vermontedition@vpr.org. Chris is calling in from Montpelier. Hi, Chris. What's your perspective?
Hi. I'd like to address the mask issue. I'm a member, a former employee, but member of our local food co-op in Montpelier. And we've required all of the employees to wear masks. It just has to be a face covering. It could even be a bandana. But everyone, just to be safe, it doesn't have to be N95 masks or surgical masks, but everyone. And we're also asking all the employees, the customers, to wear masks when shopping and to shop solo if possible and to maintain the social distancing.
Well, Chris, thanks for that update. I appreciate hearing how it's working at the co-op that you're a member and former employee of. Let's hear another thought here from Olivia in Brattleboro. Hi, Olivia.
Hi. You had your two representatives, and the representative for Price Chopper was speaking, I think, in too broad of a terms. It may be the policy from her, but as far as individual stores, it seems like that policy isn't getting down.
Which policy?
I'm in Brattleboro. We have the policy, any of the policies she was recommending for safety about masks and hand washing. She can say that, but in actuality, at least I know in our local area in Brattleboro, we have Hannaford's and Price Chopper. And last time I was in Price Chopper, I went 3 times about 3 to 4 weeks ago, and it was appalling. It was so appalling that I reported to the Attorney General. There was no wiping down. There was no distancing. There was gangs of teenagers in there, and they had no wipes or sprays at the door. There was no one wearing masks. They weren't wiping down the aisle, where you put your food. And I asked a woman who was working there if she could come and wipe the area around the register before I put my food down. And she came over with a Kleenex and water. No one was wearing masks. It was so appalling. And I believe I had a mild case that I had caught there because I had been nowhere else.
Well, Olivia, let me ask you, have you been back? Because there's, I'm not excusing any policies that you saw or anything that alarmed you. But, you know, one of the things that we've been seeing for all different sectors and throughout the state is that policies have changed rapidly over the last couple of weeks because things have new advice has come out. And in many cases, things like masks and sanitizer have not been available even to places like these stores. Have you been back?
I haven't been back there, but I've been talking with a friend who has, and it's slightly better. But there's a Hannaford store in the area which seems to do a little better. But I went there this week and the people behind the register still weren't wearing masks.
Mm.
And there really wasn't much social distancing. I spoke with the employee and asked him why he didn't have a mask on, and he said he didn't have one. And he spoke about his daughter not wanting him to come to work because she was afraid for him. And I said, I would be afraid, too, if I was in your position with all these people walking around with no masks or gloves or any precautions.
Yeah, Olivia, thank you. I hear you. And I want to take your concerns to Aaron Segrist because, you know, here's Olivia, who's a customer who's concerned about what she's seen and is worried that maybe she got sick at a grocery store. But and there are others who worry about whether they could get sick or and people who work at stores wondering if they could get sick.
Yeah, I think, you know, she shares similar concerns with the rest of the population. And to your point, Jane, things have changed rapidly. And 3 weeks ago was still fairly early on with this pandemic. And, you know, it goes back to there is no handbook on how to respond to a pandemic like this. So we've all been figuring it out as we go. And I think that, yes, there's plenty of concern, and there's also plenty of effort to do better every day. And, you know, I think that, sharing your concerns with management is a great opportunity. Again, I think the reason that employee may not have been wearing a mask is because of the sheer lack of access to masks right now. I'm really hopeful that at the end of this, there will be plenty of lessons learned and we can plan ahead for the next pandemic, God forbid. You know, we all could be a little more prepared for the next one, but this is brand new to all of us.
Let's go to Tony quickly in South Burlington. Hi, Tony. You're on the air.
Hi. Hello.
Hi.
Thanks for having me. Yeah, I just had a comment. I've been listening to the program, and I've been hearing some talk about how grocery people are concerned that they don't want to compete with the PPEs that the people in the medical industry use. And my comment is that the grocery workers only need to use a mask like I use a 3M mask, and it's not N95 mask. And it seems to me that somebody could do something to so that grocery workers could have just a dust mask to wear.
Yeah, Tony, I take your point. Mike Evans, you know, are you seeing in communities that there is sort of community sourcing of protective equipment? You mentioned it could even be a bandana, but in a lot of communities, people are making masks. Maybe they could be making masks for their grocery workers.
Well, I can tell you that to answer the question, I want to give a shout out to the local volunteers that have made our masks for us and some that we have purchased. So we just seek out individuals that want to, that are making them, and that's how we're getting our masks to them. With the scarcity and of the N95s and the procedure masks that are out there, we have to resort to the best next thing that we have, which are these cloth masks that are made with quilter's cotton that's recommended. You know, if you follow any CDC website, that's what we have these made for. And they're distributed out amongst our workers. The N95s, we want to, you know, we have to protect our frontline workers and, you know, the emergency responders, especially the healthcare industry, to make sure that they have what they need, and also us as well. So to answer a question, we sourced ours locally. We're also getting some in from outside, just to make sure that we have them. And it's been great with the great response from our communities who've donated our masks and also the ones we purchased. So the response has been awesome.
Let's go to Robert, who's with us from Essex. Hi, Robert.
Yes. Hi, Jane. Thank you very much for taking the call. I have a, you know, we kind of joke about the toilet paper shortage. My personal experience is neither my wife or I are doing shopping right now because of our age and health issues, and our adult son is doing that for us. Twice in the past 2 weeks, he has gone to the local Price Chopper at 6 a.m. when they open, which is supposed to be a time for either elderly or people with high-risk conditions, and there's absolutely no paper products, toilet paper especially, or Kleenex. So I'm concerned about the secondary effects of all this, and I'd like to hear the governor and health commissioner address this, because if people run out, they're going to be using something to cleanse themselves after they toilet. And, you know, many of those products you can't use if you have a septic system. And, you know, it's going to become unsanitary in terms of whatever people are doing. And so I worry about secondary effect. We could have an outbreak of dysentery, for heaven's sakes. So I'd like to hear somebody address what is being done to try to ramp up that supply and to anticipate, you know, the
I hear you, Robert. So let me put that first to Mike Evans. Mike, how are you trying to source toilet paper? I mean, this continues to be a problem.
Thanks. That was a great question. We constantly try to source product. As you know, the products are very, very limited due to supply and demand. And I believe there's, you know, in the beginning of this whole the COVID-19 epidemic that broke out, there was a lot of hoarding that came down and just blew out the supply chain throughout the entire industry, and just trying to replenish it. Although we've gotten some in, the hoarding continues. We and our parent company, AG, are doing a great job as far as sourcing it. They are getting supplies in almost on a daily basis, but as fast as they get it in, it's blowing out. We have instituted limits in our stores, but we get so much product in that we limit down to two items per package on certain items, especially the high moving items such as toilet paper, facials, tissues, and so on and so forth. But I think the public in general needs to understand that the product's there. It's just a matter of getting it to the shelf and lasting. I believe the gentleman on the phone, I believe that there could be something that the governor could say or do. However, I think the public in general, in my opinion, really the product's there, the supply chain's healthy. I think we just need to stop buying so much of it at one given time so everybody has it, and it can be spread out amongst everyone in the community so we don't have the issues that the gentleman was talking about.
Aaron Segrist, at one of the stores that I frequent, I saw recently they did have some toilet paper in, but it was all individually wrapped, so clearly they were sourcing differently and limiting two rolls, not just two packages, but two individual toilet rolls per person. And that didn't even last very long, it would appear. But are you seeing stores sourcing differently to try to get at least a little bit of toilet paper to customers?
Absolutely. The independent retailers and the country stores, the small businesses around the state are doing everything they can, you know, reaching out to different distributors or, you know, buying. Some of them have gone to larger wholesale positions to get additional supplies. My understanding from speaking with a handful of members, the stores are bringing in 40% more bath tissue than they did a year ago, and 60% more than paper, 60% more paper towels than they did a year ago. But people are just, for some reason, dead set to make sure that they have enough toilet paper. And, you know, I think I'll echo Mike. He's absolutely correct. People need to understand and accept that the supplies are out there. If you are buying more, then your neighbor has no access to products. So we need to be thinking about our neighbors and our friends and family, and only buying, you know, the amount that you need.
Yeah, I think that's good advice, probably hard for some people to remember when they keep seeing the store shelves so bare that, you know, they think if I only buy one package now, I'm going to be in this same position, no toilet paper in a week. And it's just, I think, hard probably for some with human nature to not try to collect as much as you can. We got a note from Liza, who emailed in to say, I heard a comment earlier on the program about only allowing single people from a household to shop, so one person per household. This opinion, which I've heard before, continues to irk me. As a single mother with a small child, I don't have the option to leave her at home when I go to the store. I imagine there are plenty of moms in this situation, either due to the child's age or to the child's special needs. Thanks for that note, Liza. And Bill in Rutland says, if you want fewer people out, then stop selling lottery tickets. It sends a mixed message to continue selling them. Erin, what do you have to say about that?
I've received some phone calls from members about that. Members were concerned that people were coming in just to buy lottery tickets. I've been in touch with the Department of Liquor and Lottery, and they have been working with retailers. Lottery is not going to shut down completely, from my understanding, but individual retailers have the ability to call the Department of Liquor and Lottery and say, please shut off my service for the next couple of weeks or the next, 2 months or 6 months. The department will work with individual retailers, but it is my understanding that they have no intention of shutting down the lottery across the state.
What about one other thing I want to address is for people who are getting federal food benefits and often get their money at the beginning of the month, it is really hard if the stock isn't there, if the shelves aren't stocked, to be able to get enough to feed your family and enough of what you need at the price that you need. Are you seeing any plans or ways to help out people who are, have EBT cards to make sure that they get the food that they need?
That is a great question. I actually have a call coming up this afternoon to discuss that particular issue. We're seeing more people using SNAP benefits at this time, understandably so. And the association has pushed for several years to have staggered dates throughout the month that people can receive their benefits. That is not to say change the existing benefits right now, but anybody moving from a date certain forward could have their benefits be dispersed on a different day. Retailers do see, more people within the first few days of the month because of SNAP benefits being issued. So we have asked a few times, especially the last couple of months, about the opportunity to identify a better date that anybody who is on who's newly participating in SNAP benefits have a different date than the beginning of the month, so that we can spread out access to supply.
Let's get a few more calls in here. Ray is with us from Montgomery. Hi, Ray. Go right ahead.
Hi. I just wanted to do a shout out to our local grocery store here, who've got a great system going now with curbside pickup. You call in with your list, or you email your list in of what you'd like and your credit card. And then a few hours later or the following day, they call you back when your order's ready. And it's sitting in a shopping cart right outside the store. And my wife and I are, 60 of a certain age, and it's really a great service. We had friends who'd gone down recently to the Hannaford's, which does have senior hours. I think you have to be there between 6 and 7 or something. And they found that inside the store it was quite crowded then, so this is a great service.
Yeah, Ray, thanks for telling us about it, because, you hear about it at some bigger stores, but a lot of local stores, I think, are also trying to implement curbside delivery. We're hearing some as well who are offering actual delivery to people's houses in some cases, especially for vulnerable people in their communities. One more thought in here from Tom in Vernon. Hi, Tom.
Well, good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call. I want to say that the Hannaford's and the Price Chopper, the Market 32 down here in Brattleboro, have been doing an outstanding job, as has the food co-op, about cleanliness and wiping things down and all that type of thing. Masks are hard to come by, but at least out in this part of the state, and they seem to be doing well. What I'm a little concerned about, I have two sons that work at these places part-time, and one of them goes in. His hours are scheduled the same every week for his normal 30 hours. But as soon as he gets in, they're sending him home after 2 hours. Without changing their schedule, he's not eligible to apply for any of the reduction in hour benefits through unemployment right now. And I don't know if that's something that is planned with these grocery stores or if it's just an oversight, but I'm sure he's not the only one.
Well, thanks for your call, Tom. Appreciate that. Mike Evans, I'm going to let you have the wrap up here. You heard from Tom and Ray, both different thoughts, curbside pickup. Tom talking about what's been going well in his town, but some of his concerns as well. What are your thoughts?
My thoughts on curbside delivery at this time, we don't do curbside delivery. However, we have online shopping through our Rosie app in our two locations in Jericho and Waterbury. And I can tell you, we have quadrupled the amount and we have maxed out our system on that. And we're pushing those orders out to like about a week out before we can get the groceries out there because we're inundated with the amount of product coming in there. Yeah. Through the online app, which is a great service, and we welcome that. But at this time, this is what we can handle. And as far as the amount of people into the stores, as I said earlier, we're seeing a reduction almost by a third to a half in any market, which is allowing the social distancing to come in, and we encourage people to come in if they feel comfortable to do that.
Yeah.
And on the other side,
well, we're going to leave it there for now, Mike, because we're running out of time. But I appreciate hearing that what you're doing and what's working at your stores. That's Mike Evans, Vice President and General Manager, overseeing 8 Vermont stores for the Associated Grocers of New England. Thanks very much for being with us, Mike.
Thank you.
And Aaron Segrist is President of the Vermont Retail and Grocers Association. Aaron, thank you for being with us.
Thanks so much, Jane.